Allan më vruatër kam jala këndal Qire vuren atar një fua Në kallës kja unuje Aqqion dhe jesë qire Esnja në gërë Du kavës kja unujë Pësë
Hi folks, Graham Sutherland back again Thursday night. Delete the, delete the beast, 21st century Jacobite. I was just looking at my, archive page there on delete the beast. That's why that was kind of fresh in my mind. Anyway, welcome to a Thursday night show. I had all sorts of trouble last week trying to get on. I really do believe I'm being targeted. I'm certainly being targeted on all social media platforms, definitely, all sorts of stuff going on, and it seems the more you share about the voting fiasco in the US, the worse it gets for you. That's what I'm finding, and yeah, definitely being targeted. I even phoned my internet provider and said, look, you know, there's something really weird going on with my broadband connection. And I said, sometimes I just can't get on. And other times it just kind of freezes up. You know, I get online, it just freezes up. And, you know, it takes quite some time to get everything reset and everything. And then I try and get back online and it won't let me, or else, it does the same again. It just gets kind of hung. It just goes into hang mode. Anyway, my internet service provider said, it would appear that your connection's been quite stable. You've been connected, you know, nonstop for, I can't remember, 5 days or something. And I said, well, that's just not the case in the real world. That's maybe what's going on according to your computer, but that's not what's going on in my computer. So there's an information war on. There's a war on for information. And as I always point out, and it's very important, we have to keep in mind, first and foremost, that this is a spiritual battle, and these are spiritual matters. And you can actually see it. It's becoming more and more apparent. These are spiritual battles. The Luciferic side is becoming more and more obvious. It's becoming more and more obvious what they're doing and what their agenda is. And it's a battle. It's a battle for your soul. It's a battle for your mind. It's a battle for decency and morality and everything good and everything godly against control and manipulation and deception and compliance. And, just dumbed down cheap, which is a Luciferic side of things. There's very few people. I mean, I'm on various groups and, you know, platforms and pages online. And you can just tell by the general vibe, there's not a lot of people supporting Biden. There's not a lot of people supporting the left. Very, very few. And, I mean, that was obviously true last week. There's not a lot of support, after what's happened, the whole meltdown in the voting system and all the fraud it went on, even you know, sort of hard and fast Democrats have came to realise that their party is undermining the whole democratic process and undermining the whole fabric of democracy in America. You know, they're realising that. They're not particularly pro-Trump, but they're certainly anti, you know, lies and deception. They're certainly anti anything that puts a spanner in the works of, you know, the voting system. Because, I mean, that's the very essence of the US democracy, and the world is watching. The whole world is watching, and it's absolutely shameful, you know, what's happened. It's just absolutely disgusting. I can hardly get my head around what's happened. It's just like, it just defies, reason and morality. That's what it is. But there's a certain, that's the nature of the Luciferic. There's a certain blindness goes along with it. That's what you've got to understand. That's what you have to comprehend before it makes, you know, well, it makes any sense. There is a blindness that goes along with it. There is a certain, a kind of romantic, idealistic sort of notion that goes along with it. So that's what we're seeing. So it's gradually starting to fall apart. It's gradually starting to fall apart. The narrative, the lies, the deception that's been foisted upon the American people is starting to unravel. And, you know, I can state more or less, without fear of contradiction, quite categorically, that Biden will not get in. He will not get in. The Democrats will not get in. It's not going to happen. The voting deception, the, you know, the cheating and the lying is so deep and widespread, it's unbelievable. It would make even a seasoned, hardened Democrat kind of turn on the grave, you know, when they see how much lies and deception there is on the go. Now, I know there's people, I mean, it's the same in this country, there's people who are, you know, second and third and fourth generation, you know, for the party, Democrats or whatever. I know that, you know, and my father and my grandfather and my great-grandfather was a Democrat and blah, blah, blah. You get all that stuff. But, I mean, the left and the America, the left has been totally hijacked by these LGBT lunatics trying to basically trying to pervert our kids and manipulate and mind control everybody into becoming, you know, gender bender, gender fluid maniacs or whatever. And then you've got the Common Core fiasco at the school that they're trying to push upon us, and the Drag Time Story Hour, all that filth being thrown at us. It's you know, it's disgusting. So we have to call them out. We have to call them out for what they are. And a lot of this is not political language. A lot of this is spiritual language. Calling them Luciferic, it's not political language, but it's spiritual language, because these are spiritual, it matters, as I say. And if you look at the plans of what they've got on the go, the mandates that they've got on the go, it's all about basically strangling the people, strangling the population into, you know, utter compliance, and, you know, taking the vaccination and taking the microchip or whatever to buy and sell. It's all the biblical beast system that's unfolding right before our eyes. I've heard some older people saying, you know, I don't know what's going on, you know, because I'm not on the internet really. But I've heard older people saying, I don't know what's going on, but there's something going on behind the scenes. I just know it. I can feel it. There's something horrible going on behind the scenes, and I don't like it. You know, and it's more, I mean, they even realize that it's more than just a contested vote. It's a lot deeper than that. It's a lot more sinister than that. And they know it. You know, they've got a gut feeling about it. Absolutely, definitely. And I'm talking about older folk, it's not on the internet, you know, they're not particularly internet savvy or whatever, but, you know, they've been around for a few years, and they just know lies and deception when they hear it. That's what's happening. So the whole system is just unraveling. It's falling apart. The voting machines, turns out, I could hardly believe it. I could hardly believe it when I heard it, but the voting machines, the patent for the software is held by the Clintons. The software. So basically they're in charge of the software for the voting machines. So they've got a built-in, obviously, I mean, all they can do is lie and deceive. So they've done what they do best, and that's lie and deceive. So they've got a built-in glitch in the voting machines called the hammer. And it's basically a very clever. I was reading about it. There's a part of the program that it basically sweeps, and it can tell where there is danger points. You'd call them swing states, and it basically just alters votes from red to blue. That's what it's designed to do, and that's what it does, and they call it the hammer. So every single state that used voting machines is basically null and void. The votes are null and void. They can't be... None of that can be taken serious. So, loads of other scams have came to light. You know, dead people voting. Females saying that they voted in their married name and in their maiden name. So, in other words, they voted twice, at least twice. Another female came forward and said her dog had voted. Yes, her dog. Now, just to put that into... common language, her dog's actually a service dog, and they use the service dog's ID number, it's a microchip number, they use that instead of a national insurance number as a voter ID. So dogs have even voted in this election. So you've got dogs and dead people voting in this election, and you've got people voting twice, but there's nothing, I mean, there's nothing to stop people voting 3, 4, 5 times, because in a lot of the polling stations, by their own admission, they weren't asking people for voter ID. They were just, they were just accepting them. People were basically making up names, of people who they knew weren't going to vote. You know, they were just using their names, and then they were going back out and then coming back in and voting again using someone else's name. So what they did was they were canvassing, from door to door to get a list, a database of people that, names and addresses of people that couldn't be bothered voting, or they were too scared to go out in case there was trouble, or they were too old. And, you know, they just couldn't make it down the road. So there was a whole database of these names that they were used. The Democrats used these names and armies of people to vote in waves over and over and over again, using these people's names. And when this scam came to light, a lot of these people were going, oh, well, I'll just check and see if I voted, because I didn't. I didn't vote. I don't believe in it, or I couldn't get down, or, you know, I had the flu or whatever. But they were checking and finding out that they had actually voted. And in virtually every single case, it was a vote for Biden. So the voting machines are completely rigged, completely rigged. The dead people voting, obviously, is a major scam. Dogs voting, women voting twice or three times, depending on how many times they've been married, you know, how many names they had, all of this stuff. If you add it all together, I mean, it just spells huge fraud. The whole thing, just fraudulent. It's just a joke, an absolute joke. And they've overplayed their hand because in some counties and in some states, there was more people actually voted than was registered to vote. Substantially more people voted. And I mean, that's ridiculous. That's over 100% turnout, which is absolutely insane because, as we know, you're lucky if you get 40 to 50% in the real world coming out to vote. You're lucky if you get 40 for 40 or 50% of registered voters actually voting. It's the same everywhere. It's the same in, you know, EU, UK. It's the same over here, which is the way it goes. That's the nature of the beast. But oh, not in America. Oh no. Some states have had 111% turnout, which is just makes an absolute joke of the whole voting process, doesn't it? It just makes it. It turns the whole thing into a comedy. It's not clever, and it's really not cool. It reeks. It just reeks of a deception. And there's so many people just, I mean, as I say, even Democrats turn around and going, whoa, we don't want any part of this. This is clearly undermining our democracy. You know, put your party politics to one side for this, because, well, you have to. There's deep state operators or Masonic elite or pedophile establishment. I mean, they go by many names, but we all know who we're talking about. They are working away behind the scenes, and you know, we know what their goal is. They want a cashless society and a one world order. So yeah, and I mean, it couples into everything else that's happening. This grand scam COVID thing, grossly exaggerating the numbers, and they're going about testing healthy people all over the place. You know, they're queuing up to get tested. And of course, the CPR tests are 94% inaccurate. They're just wildly inaccurate. Loads of medical staff have come out and said, whoa, wait a minute, this is like wildly inaccurate. These tests are picking up RNA fragments in people's blood, which is basically a residue of, you know, previous mild infections. And it's picking up other stuff as well. Basically, they're ultra sensitive, and it's just, you know, just giving false positives all over the place so they can just sow fear. And that's what they do. That's what they, you know, they're purveyors of fear. That's what they're doing. They're trying to get everyone whipped up. It's tragic when you see how effective they have been. When you just look around you know, not just, well, in your own hometown, but also on TV, and you see everybody queuing up with their masks on like sheep. It's tragic, absolutely tragic. The mask is an occultic symbol. It's a symbol of compliance. It's also a symbol of mind control. You've been successfully mind controlled because you're believing what the media says. You know, you're going about with your mask on, like a fool, thinking you're some kind of righteous person. But in actual fact, all you're doing is playing into the hands of the enemy, the Luciferians, the beast system. So yes, it all ties in. It all ties in. And while all this is going on, the world is absolutely teetering on the brink of Third World War. It's getting worse, much worse. American relations have have never been so poor as they are with China. And there's China was doing a live drill in the South China Sea this week. And it's the first time they've done this, but they were actually, they had a drill simulating an attack from three sides. So they were obviously simulating an attack from three sides because they expect to be attacked by Taiwan, Japan, and the US all at the same time. And that's what they're preparing for. Now, I'm old enough and wise enough to realize when you get these recurring military drills, it's always a precursor to war. You know, you get drill after drill after drill, and the drills are intensifying and becoming more realistic, as in using live ammunition and whatnot. You just know it's a precursor to war. So the South China Sea is just an absolute hotspot. So, yeah, they've got the Taiwanese have got American weapons now, and laser-guided weapons, actually, that can, you know, beam right across the sea. And obviously China's got the same thing, you know, they've got laser-guided weapons as well. But the rhetoric, the fear, the suspicion, it's all getting ramped up. All getting ramped up. And America is still insisting on putting battle groups up and down through the straits in the South China Sea. And, well, basically just to keep the pressure up. That's what they're doing. So that's hotspot number one. Hotspot number two is the situation in Armenia and Azerbaijan. It's another very dangerous situation. Okay, the Russians have managed to broker a ceasefire. However, the Turks are in. So-called peacekeepers, observers, and so is the Russians. So I'm concerned that a lot of the civic buildings, a lot of the, what did they call them? They basically mean churches and cathedrals, but they were calling them shrines. That probably just got lost in translation, but basically what they were saying was a lot of ancient buildings great architectural value and significance were being destroyed with the relentless war. So anyway, you've got Turkey in there and you've got Russia in there. And remember, this is Armenia and Azerbaijan are both former Soviet countries that were under the Soviet umbrella. And it was actually Russia that negotiated or implemented, is maybe a better word, the Karabakh region, which they're fighting over. It was the Soviet Union that actually drew that particular map back in the day. So obviously, I mean, it's kind of in the Soviet Union. It's in Russia's backyard. I mean, it was a mess. It's only right that the Russians should go in and try and broker a ceasefire, because it was their mess in one sense. You know, it was a map that was drawn during the Soviet era. But things are extremely tense there. They really are. And the ceasefire that Russia's brokered has given Azerbaijan a more area, more zones, more regions, disputed regions than they had before. And obviously that's completely, pissed off the Armenians because they've lost their territory. But by the same token, at least there's not bombs dropping anymore. But the situation there is very, very tense. And Turkey as always, are just itching for a fight. It makes me nervous because Turkey is Turkey's in the Bible. It's known as Gog, and Russia's Magog. So you've got Gog and Magog, both very much in the book of Revelation and the books of Book of Daniel, the other prophetic books, as being well, the instigators of World War III, the beginning of the, you know, the Battle of Armageddon. So yeah, Turkey's really flexing its muscles there. You just sometimes wonder if they realise that they're in the Book of Revelation as the bad guys, if you like. I mean, Turkey are meant to be NATO members. Well, they are NATO members, but Turkey's always been very unstable. You know, they're not very good at sticking to, you know, treaties and things like that. They're notoriously are a bit of a wild card. Turkey's always been dangerous that way and very expansionist. You know, they're very quick to get involved in territorial and regional disputes all around them. I mean, they're in Libya, they're in Syria, they're in Azerbaijan, as we know, and they're also in Cyprus. And you know, some of the Greek islands. We've got Greece and Turkey squaring off with each other as well. On the other side of Turkey, you know, going down into the area with all the Greek islands in it. Greece has got hundreds of islands, so it's a very dangerous situation on two sides of Turkey. So you've got another zone, what we call Zone 3, conflict Zone 3, which is the north of India, where it borders China. Now, there's been border disputes. There was one this week, and this was not reported on mainstream media at all, but there was 20 Indians killed, 20 Indian soldiers killed in skirmishes with the Chinese. And as I say, that was not on the news. They didn't want to scare people, but there was certainly 20 deaths. That came out of sources in India. So things are dangerous. Things are really dangerous there. Now, remember as well, both India and China are nuclear powers, and they've both got over 1 billion people. I mean, if they started a war, they have started a war. We're seeing the early stages of a war if 20 troops got killed. But if they went all out, if India and China went all out, it would be a real mess, like. And I fear that it would get nuclear pretty damn quick, and it would get really, we'd get nuclear, and it would get pretty scary. They're both very, very suspicious of each other. That's the thing, you know. And where you've got suspicion, you've got fear. And where you've got, you know, you've got fear and nervousness, well, you've got just an absolute powder keg of danger, you know, in that region. Very, very dangerous. Very dangerous indeed. Now, the fourth region, the fourth area where you've got a lot of tension is Poland. Now, America has quietly, while all this COVID stuff and everything was going on, America's installed missile batteries, and they're on the, basically on the Russian border, and they're clearly aimed at Russia, and these missiles can easily be quickly converted into nuclear warhead-type missiles. And President Putin has turned around and said, look, no, we don't accept this. We want you to take these missiles away because we don't have missiles on your border. What you're doing here in Poland would be exactly the same as us putting missile batteries in Mexico or Venezuela or whatever. And we could. We could do that. But we don't want to escalate tensions. We want to do the reverse. We want to go back to previous treaties, you know, missile reduction treaties, and reintroduce them, and then work towards reducing our nuclear stockpiles. That's always been Putin's position. He's always been very clear and very concise about that. You know, let's reintroduce the arms treaties that was penned by Reagan and Gorbachev. Let's reintroduce them, and let's work towards reducing nuclear weapons. Let's do that. That's his position, and that's the position of a peacekeeper, not a warmonger. I mean, the biggest threat right now, still, is the US. They're the biggest threat to world peace. They keep making out that Russia's interfering and Russia's doing this and Russia's doing that. It's just all a load of hogwash. You know, it really is. It's just warmongering rhetoric. They're doing the same with China. They're trying to make out that, you know, China's this, you know, this big military threat to the rest of the world. And it's absolute, you know, nonsense, because China may be an economic threat, but they're not a warmongering nation. They've never been a warmongering nation. They've got huge resources now that they never had before. They're certainly an emerging power. They're a rising world power, for sure. But they're not attacking any of their neighbours. You know, they're not going around attacking anyone. Actions in the South China Sea would be considered defensive, pretty much defensive. They're not offensive. I wouldn't accept that at all. But I mean, historically, if you look back at Chinese history, you know, over the years going back, they are just not a warmongering nation. And neither's Iran. Iran's not attacked anyone for 300 years. And America try and make out, you know, there's an Iranian threat and this scary Iranians and all this kind of, you know, media hype, all this hysterical Masonic media nonsense. But, we know what they're about. We know exactly what they're about and what they're trying to do. But, Iran and China are on the same boat, really. Neither of them are, warmongers. So you've got that going on. And then you've got, remember as well, you've got the situation between Saudi Arabia and Yemen and Iran. That's, I would call that, you know, a conflict. Number five, conflict point number five, or danger area number five, if you like. They are they're at war with their neighbours. Saudi Arabia is at war, if you can call it a war. I would call it mass murder. They keep attacking Yemen, and they'll say, there's other players at hand there, obviously. You've got Iran supplying weapon systems and arms to Yemen. And it's kind of like a proxy war, in a sense. The crazy thing is, America have got military advisors and even fuel planes in the air. Supplying the Saudis with air refueling. Now, that kind of stuff's never on the mainstream news, because the mainstream news don't want us to know what's going on, you know. They don't want us to know how aggressive the US war hawks are. But a lot of what they're doing is extremely dangerous. Now, I mean, Iran knows what America's up to. Iran knows America's got military advisors in Saudi, and they've got, you know, refueling planes, tanker planes. And don't forget, Saudis are also obviously using American arms, American missile systems, American planes to impose a genocide on Yemen. Poor Yemen are just an absolutely beleaguered, bombed out country on the verge of starvation. It's horrendous what they've done to the Yemenis. But of course, they've got the right. It's the same. Well, it's a similar situation to Venezuela. They want to destabilize the place. They want a war, so they can put the UN in under the guise of peacekeeping and start stealing the resources. That's what they're about. That's exactly what they're about. And that's also what they were about in Syria, but it kind of backfired a bit. And although the US is still stealing Syrian oil, it's on a much smaller scale than was going on, even 2 or 3 years ago. It's on a much smaller scale. And of course, it's kind of, we've reached a time in history where the demand for oil is not, it's not black gold anymore. It's not black gold. There's a glut. The price of oil has been held artificially high. I mean, we're still paying through the nose for it here. It's like, what is it? It's about $1.25 a litre here. Pound sterling. $1.25 a litre. So if you times that by 4.6. I just bought some today, actually. Okay, so we'll call it £1. Call it 1.22. It's round about that, and I'll just times that by 4.6. So it's 5.60 a gallon. That's what we are paying for it. That's a lot of money. But Britain's always been, we've always been ripped off with our fuel prices, always. It's shocking. So the global demand for oil is going down. It's going down because there's not so much stuff getting moved around. There's more and more electric vehicles coming on the go. And even the existing vehicles, of course, they're far more efficient than they were even 10 years ago. I mean, there's some cars. My neighbour was telling me he's got a Suzuki Swift. It's a little Suzuki car, a little bit bigger than a Mini Suzuki Swift. Quite spacious inside, though. You know, I've been in it. It doesn't feel like a little small car. Anyway, he's getting 78 miles to the gallon. 78. That's nearly 80 miles to the gallon. Now, even mopeds, 20 years ago, even mopeds, single-cylinder mopeds, weren't getting that kind of miles to the gallon. I think the Swift, I could be wrong, but I think it's a three-cylinder engine. I think it's a 1,000cc three-cylinder Ecotec style engine. If it's not a three, it's a four. But that miles per gallon is absolutely phenomenal. Unbelievable. That's nearly 80 miles to gallon. In fact, he says he gets over 80 on the motorway. You know, he's sitting in sixth gear or whatever and cruising. He can get over 80. If you said that to someone 20, 25 years ago, you know, that cars in the future would be getting 80 miles to gallon, people would have just laughed at you, thinking you were an absolute nutter. But that's the way it's going. It's a diesel motor, by the way. It's a little diesel engine. It's a 1,000cc turbo diesel. That's what it is. And I mean, it's absolutely phenomenal. You could drive all day. It would cost you like £10. It's absolutely phenomenal, unbelievable. And yeah, I mean, loads of cars are the same. Most cars are the same. They're getting much, much better, miles to gallon. And then you get these hybrids as well, remember? Semi-electric. Electric and petrol self-charging hybrids. And some of them are getting up to 100 miles to gallon. So, yeah, vehicles are much, much more efficient than they were. And also, you've got the added element of there being a percentage of road fuel is biofuel now. That's another thing. I noticed a little sticker on the BP fuel pump today up in town. I noticed a little sticker that says this BP fuel contains up to 8% biofuel. Up to 8% biofuel. So, cars are more efficient. Fuels are cleaner. And it's not all so-called fossil fuels either. It's, as I say, they're mixing it with bio oils, which is like rapeseed oil or sunflower seed oil or whatever. So that's just not the demand for oil. So you're going to see, in fact, I think that's probably what really is behind the reason for Trump taking all the troops home, you know, from Afghanistan and Iraq and everything. There's no need to be stealing stuff that's got a diminishing value, and there's a glut, a world glut, in the markets. All the tankers and all the storage tankers around the world and the ships are all full of oil. And like I say, the demand has went right down because it's like there's so much stuff not happening now. You know, there's no public gatherings like, you know, football matches and stuff. There's none of that happening. So people are not driving around the same as they were. And in fact, a lot of areas in the world are locked down, actually locked down, which means, again, less fuel. So that market's going to crash. I mean, it's pretty much going to crash. It's got to crash. It's probably the most wasteful, crazy industry there is for spending big bucks. You know, thinking it's the gravy train's going to go on forever. The oil industry is notoriously wasteful. I mean, I know that for a fact because I was brought up in Aberdeen, in Scotland, which is an oil city. That's our Houston. And I remember in the 70s, it was full of Americans. When they discovered North Sea oil, it was full of Americans. And I mean, really full of Americans. We had an American supermarket, an American school, all sorts of American stuff going on in the mid to late 70s. But the locals, Scots very quickly learned how to do it for themselves, and there was thousands, as I say, Americans in Aberdeen in the 70s and 80s, but after sort of the millennium and up to date, there's less and less of them, less and less American accents in town. So yeah, because it was a new industry. You see, we hadn't. They discovered oil in the North Sea in the very early 70s, about 71, 72, and they started pumping it out about 74, 75. They got rigs over from America initially, and then we started building our own rigs. But yeah, that's what happened. So a lot of those rigs are still producing. big producers, and you know, they're up and running, so there's no need for exploration or anything, you know, because they're actually in production, and we're pretty much self-sufficient for oil in this country, and gas. I know, I think we're importing a little bit of gas. I think we'll import some gas from Norway. There's pipes come right across the North Sea. About 500 mile long pipes come across the North Sea. And they land at St. Fergus in the northeast. So, yeah, so it's interesting that they always keep finding more. They keep finding more oil in really obscure places. So it's never going to go done. You know, they kept telling us it was going to go done. We're going to run out of oil. It was a finite resource. It's a lot of absolute nonsense. They're going into wells. They're going back into wells that were capped 25, 30 years ago, and having a look, and they're producing oil again. The oils came back. So these were wells that were abandoned by, you know, Shell and BP and whatnot, and capped. And, you know, smaller companies have bought them up, speculating, and they open them up, and they're making a fortune. They're back on stream, pumping oil. There's loads of, there's hundreds of rigs in the North Sea, and they're way, way up, almost as far as the Arctic Circle. So it's a huge, huge oil fields there, up and around Shetland as well. There's a lot of oil up there. So, and then you've got America's shale oil thing as well. Don't forget about that, the shale oil industry. So there's no shortage of oil. There's no shortage of oil. They just told us that so they could hike the price up, create a false scarcity. Absolutely the oldest trick in the book, isn't it? Limited supply, special offer. Buy now. Buy now while you can. It's just kidology. Hi. I can hear somebody clearing their throat. Hello?
Hey, Graham, how you doing?
Oh, not bad. Is that you, Stephen?
It's John from South Carolina.
Oh, John, how you doing, John?
I listened to you from the beginning. That was great. I just wanted to add that any kind of change in the oil being our primary fuel will take at least 30 years. So if they do invent something, you're not going to touch it for 10. So it's just in history, you know, when they went from kerosene, from cod liver oil, that took 30 years. Then from coal to steam, that took steam to diesel, that took 30 years. So anyway, they don't have the new cold fusion device for us, but you're right, though. It'll be fuel. It'll be fossil fuels.
Yeah, but listen, remember, the electric car industry is really taking off.
Yeah, that's a transference of energy, of course. And then, yeah, they burn coal to give us electricity. So, but the whole thing is a big scam. I mean, you know, it's like Americans think that we sell power back to the company. No, we don't. They subsidize, the government subsidizes Duke Power, for instance, and they don't, your meter doesn't run backwards. They record how much you do, and then they charge the government, and you pay it with tax. So it's just a big scam. There's no alternative to fuel except for efficiency, like the Suzuki you spoke of. Now look it up, a Honda Rebel 250 gets 80 miles to the gallon. I had one. Amazing. And a moped only gets 50. And a Suzuki, yeah, you know, a Suzuki 750 gets only 40. So, yeah. And it's a heavy machine, but it's a 250cc one. So Suzuki, you know, they used to have cars over here with 80 miles a gallon. You could pick up the rear end of the Suzuki with one arm.
Yeah.
But they outlawed them, like you were saying. But you were spot on about the energy. But what my final, before I before I motormouth too much, I just want to leave one final thing is, I think you should put all your energy into preparing for a civil war like the South Vietnamese did, developing little things that can save you and survive the civil war. I think, yes. I think you know in your gut it's coming, and you're a war hero. And yep. This is one war hero to another. And I'll sign off with that, sir. Over and out.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, thanks for that. Thanks for that contribution. Yeah, that's right. We are headed up to a civil war, and they're already speaking about that in this country. The jungle drums are already, the war drums are already beating, and they already yes. are. People are starting to, well, those that are aware of the battle plan are starting to prepare. In this country and and in America. That's been going on for years in America, hasn't it? The whole prepper movement.
I was just looking at the time, Graham. Excellent show. Yeah. Just noticed we're just about at the top of the hour, though.
Ah, that's right. I just noticed that. Okay, Richard, I'll wind up. Okay, I just realized time has crept up on us. That was a quick hour. However, you can join us in the round table. The round table is back to back on my show, and you're more than welcome to join us. You can phone in. We welcome people phoning in, which would be great, and we can basically continue our discussion on the round table if you want to continue over there.
Hey, Graham,
you're more than welcome.
I might restart the conference, though. I might restart the conference because I'm not seeing John's profile on here now. So I might restart it again to fix that. So you might want to jump back on, too, if you're going to join us. Thanks.
Okay, yep. Okay, I'll do that. Okay, folks, yeah, we're gonna disconnect and reconnect, basically. That's what's going to happen. But that won't affect you. If you normally just listen online, that won't affect you in any way. It'll just mean there'll be a 2 or 3 minute gap. But anyway, I'll wind up the show. It's Graham Sutherland here, 21st Century Jacobite. And like I say, if you want to continue this discussion on these topics or any topic, really, that's what a roundtable is all about. It's a kind of free-for-all. You're more than welcome to join us. But hopefully I'll be back next week at the same time, all being well. So I'll say good night and God bless for now.
Cowboys count.